Between the Lord and Ramana Narayan. Mahanta Swabhava E Tarite Pamara
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 Nija Karya Nahi Tabo Jnana Taragara
Nija Karya Nahi Tabo Jnana Taragara to beg from door to door. He does not beg simply because he is hungry. His real purpose is to enlighten the occupants of every house by preaching Krishna consciousness. A sannyasi does not abandon his superior position and become a beggar just for the sake of begging. Similarly, a person in household life may be very important, but he may also voluntarily take to the mendicant way of life. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were ministers, but they voluntarily accepted the mendicant's life in order to humbly preach Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message. It is said about them, although the Goswamis were very aristocratic, on the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they became mendicants just to deliver the fallen souls. One should also consider that those who engage in the missionary activities of the Krishna consciousness movement are under the guidance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are not actually beggars. Their real business is to deliver fallen souls. Therefore, they may go from door to door just to introduce a book about Krishna consciousness, so that people can become enlightened by reading. Formerly, brahmacharis and sannyasis used to beg from door to door. At the present moment, especially in the Western countries, a person may be handed over to the police if he begs from door to door. In Western countries, begging is considered criminal. Members of the Krishna consciousness movement have no business begging. Instead, they work very hard to introduce some literatures about Krishna consciousness so that people can read them and be benefited. But if one gives some contribution to a Krishna conscious man, he never refuses it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Jnanam Timiram Dasya Jnanam Janashalakaya Chakshurumi Pramina Tasmai Shri Gurudam Dasa Shri Chaitanya Manam Vishwam Stapitam Yenam Vatale Swayam Rupha Kadama Yam Tadati Swapatantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Da Padakalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shri Shri Rupam Sahajratam Sahagana Raghunatam Damutam Sajivam Sarvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padahan Sagana Nidita Shri Sabram Dutam Shcha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bhandhu Jagatay Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaste Tapta Kanchana Kuram Giri Radhe Vinda Vaneshwari Vishvam Sude Devi Pranamani Hari Panchakalpa Trimavishya Kripa Sindhu Dhevacha Kripita Naam Pavani Vishnu Vibhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashaya Bhutale Shmati Bhakti Viramte Swami Namo Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravana Kujaya Nirvishesha Sanyadi Pashkadi Satanya Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. It is the general practice of all saintly people to deliver the fallen. Therefore, they go to people's houses, although they have no personal business there. So, in this purport, Prabhupada makes many, many interesting points. He mentions two personalities in particular, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. Now, Prabhupada describes how they came from not just aristocratic backgrounds, but very aristocratic backgrounds, and they became mendicants. Actually, it's described that Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they were devotees from the very birth. And eventually, in their lives, they were employed by the Nawab Hussein Shah. And it wasn't done based on voluntary agreement. They were actually forced to play that role. At that time in Nawab Hussein's province, the majority were Hindus. And he knew that to control that province, he would have to employ those that perhaps came from the same background. And he threatened Sanatana Rupa Goswami that if they didn't do as he wished, then he would go and persecute all the Hindus. So practically speaking, they were forced to play that role. And Sanatana Goswami, he was practically the prime minister for the king. And Sanatana Goswami was the prime minister, and Rupa Goswami, he was considered like the home minister. And they were very qualified in many ways. They're very learned. It's described how they understood various languages. And because of the position that they held, they were given honorary titles. The Bir caste and Sakya Malik. And not only that, because of the positions that they held, they were given facilities. They were given wealth, extreme wealth. And they were given land. They were given property. In fact, if you go to Ram Kelly, where Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami resided as ministers, they have this huge bathing ghat. It's called Rupa Sagar and Sanatana Sagar. And if you go there, you'll see that this bathing ghat isn't an ordinary bathing ghat. It can fill up to 10,000 people. That was the extent of their opulence. But we see as their lives go on, and through the narrations of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see that by the influence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they take, as mentioned by Prabhupada, they take and become mendicants. And it's described in this purport and the verse, the duty of such a mendicant. It's described how they go from house to house. Not because they're searching for food, but there is a system called Madhukar in India. Madhu means honey. And so a bee, you'll notice it will take honey from one flower and go to another flower, and take from that flower and go to another flower. And it will take a drop from each flower. So in the same way, traditionally, renunciates, they would perform this activity. And Sanatana Goswami in particular is described as a renunciate who set the example for all other renunciates. In fact, there's one pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita where he's in Benares. And one Mahastrian Brahmana, he approaches him and he says that as long as you're in Benares, you must come to my house and take prasad. And Sanatana Goswami refuses. He says, no, I'm a mendicant and I'll perform Madhukara. I'll go from one house to another. Not that they keep going to the same house. And this had many purposes. One was that they didn't want to overburden the householder that they were going to. Another reason, and the most important reason, is that the nature of a renunciate, and this is actually the real principle why one should take sannyas, is that they want to dedicate their lives to benefiting others. We see in Chaitanya Charitamrita how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, you know, he was a young man, 24 years old, he had a young wife, he had a widowed mother, and in such a situation, one wouldn't normally take sannyas. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that there were those that wouldn't respect him unless he took sannyas, and hence would be bereft of his mercy, so he took sannyas. So in the same way, we see Sanatana Goswami is doing this. And so this is the actual duty of an ounce. And by taking prasad at various householders' homes, they acquire devotional benefit. So we understand that it's an important principle that, if, particularly if we're a householder, that we should invite renunciates, sannyasis, to our particular homes and feed them. This is the duty of a householder. It's interesting, also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's an interesting interaction between Advaita Acharya and Haridas Thakur. Advaita Acharya, he resides in Shantipur, and he's considered amongst the Brahminical community the leader of all the Brahmins. He's elderly, he's also very wise, very exalted personality. And what we see at one point in his pastimes, Haridas Thakur comes to Shantipur. Now at that time, the Brahmins were very caste conscious. Anyone that came from an outcast family, a Malecha background, and we see Haridas Thakur for the past time, he's born in a Muslim family. In fact, he's Lord Brahma in a previous life. But he plays that position to teach a lesson to the world. And so everyone's very caste conscious. In fact, it's said that if even the shadow of an outcast or an untouchable, as they termed it in those times, even if the shadow came across the home of a brahmana, the brahmana would have to empty his home and clean the entire home with cow dung. That's how superstitious they were. And then when Haridas Thakur comes to Shantipur, Advaita Acharya, the leader of the brahmanas, as soon as he sees Haridas Thakur, he embraces him. And so this is quite shocking for the brahmanas, as you can suspect. In fact, Advaita Acharya, in many ways, he serves Haridas Thakur. He even gave him he arranged a cave where Haridas Thakur resided. And during the narration, we hear how Advaita Acharya, on behalf of his father, he performs the Shraddha ceremony. And during this ceremony, he invites all the brahmanas of the community to his home. And he seats them. And during the Shraddha ceremony, one seat is reserved for the most exalted personality in the community. And the first offering of prasad is offered to that person. And this is very significant, because according to the consciousness of the person who is offered that position, the Shraddha ceremony is considered successful or not. So all the brahmins come, and Advaita Acharya receives them. It's described how he bathes the feet. And the greatest brahmins come, the Tri Vedis, the Chatur Vedis, the Bhattacharyas, they all come. And all of them are thinking, Advaita Acharya will offer me that position. And so the whole ceremony is about to begin. Everyone's seated, but the seat's still empty. And Advaita Acharya, he leaves the room. And so the brahmana is thinking, what's going on? And so just outside the arena is Haridas Thakur. He's waiting there. He's thinking, perhaps after the ceremony is finished, Advaita Acharya will mercifully give me a little prasad. Upon seeing Haridas Thakur, Advaita Acharya embraces him. And Haridas Thakur, he's reluctant whenever Advaita Acharya approaches him, because he knows that he'll receive criticism. But Advaita Acharya, understanding the truth, he drags Haridas Thakur forcibly into the arena and seats him in this seat. And seeing this, you can understand the brahmanas are very upset. It's kind of considered like if the prime minister, you know, has some scandal. It's equivalent to that. This is how the brahmins are seeing it. And they're explaining, oh, Advaita Acharya, the whole Shraddha ceremony is now ruined. But Advaita Acharya, he replies actually that because I have fed Haridas Thakur, now my father, he's guaranteed to go to Vaikuntha. All my ancestors have been liberated. So we understand from this pastime the opportunity householders have if they serve the renouncers or the great Vaishnavas. In this purport, we see how Prabhupada is explaining how in today's culture there's no appreciation for the system. In fact, Prabhupada says that if a sannyasi went door to door requesting food, it would be considered a criminal. In fact, such a person would be arrested. And Prabhupada's genius says that he adopted a different system. He says instead, the brahmacharis and sannyasis, actually all Vaishnavas, they should go from door to door and try and distribute books. So often when Prabhupada was accused of begging, he would say, no, we're distributing books, we're giving something. We're not just begging, but we're giving something and we're asking for a donation. And so the same principles that are there in Madhukari system are met in book distribution. Because ultimately anyone that comes in touch with a book distributor is benefited. And when a devotee is distributing books, there's a certain interaction that takes place. One is that the receiver of the book, he gives a donation. And by giving Lakshmi to a Vaishnava, one acquires Sukriti, a devotional credit. And perhaps considerably more important is that by receiving the book, one is receiving some Sambandhi Jnana. Now, unless one doesn't have Sambandha Gyan, one cannot begin spiritual life. Sambandha Gyan means one understands one's relationship with Krishna. And one has knowledge of the process that connects one to Krishna. Once one devotee, he was with Srila Prabhupada, and they were talking about book distribution. And during the course of the conversation, Srila Prabhupada asked this individual, "Do you know what book distribution is? Do you know what it means?" And this person was a little dumbfounded. He didn't know what to say. So he thought, "Let me just be honest." And said, he said, "I don't know." And Prabhupada said to him that book distribution means the distribution of knowledge. Book distribution means the distribution of knowledge. It's not that we're just going out and being, we're not a salesman. I mean, when I was in Mayapur, I was asking Bhaktivedanta Padmaswami about varnas, and how is it that you know what your varna is? And at that time, the service that I was doing was book distribution. And so I asked, I do book distribution, how am I to know what my nature is, what my varna is? And he said, book distribution can be done in many mentalities, in different kind of mindsets. See, we can go out and do book distribution because we want to give people knowledge. We can go out and do book distribution because we want position or recognition. We can go out and do book distribution because we want to make money. We just like making money. But the real purpose of book distribution is to give knowledge. So in that perspective, we can understand that actually it's a brahminical activity. And knowledge is important. According to the knowledge we have, we will live a certain way. Right? According to the values that are built up from the knowledge that we have, we live a certain way. We see in today's culture there's a certain type of knowledge that's propagated. Often it's encouraged that we are considered to think that we are the body. We are considered to think that this life is the only life. In one purport, Prabhupada says that the biggest mistake in this world is that people in this world think that they have no next life. We're throwing around ideas that, if we have lots of money, we'll be happy. If we look good, we'll be happy. If we hang around a certain crowd, we'll be happy. So these are the ideas that are pushed out in this world. And we see particularly media, marketing, and advertising agencies, they play a big role in making this idea pervade the society that we live in. It's quite interesting to observe how people act during this particular period of the year. I mean, Christmas, strictly speaking, is supposed to be a religious occasion. It's supposed to be an occasion where we glorify God and those that are dedicating themselves to God. But we see instead corporate organizations, marketing agencies, they've used this religious occasion and completely commercialized it. And we see how, frantically, the build-up to Christmas, people are running around trying to buy gifts, trying to buy shops, to go to shops and buy gifts for others. And it's quite interesting to note how powerful these agencies are, that even after Christmas, they create this whole Boxing Day sales. And so even though people have been shopping for 1 month, even after Christmas, there's a whole impetus to buy goods. One devotee was telling me how on Boxing Day, Next, which is just down the road, opened at 4:30 in the morning. And there was a huge queue of people, massed, just to enter Next. It's interesting, someone was equating it to like, if you've been to the manor, there's a queue for Janmashtami. It was a little bit like that. They had fences set up and they had a guard saying only 5 at a time can go in. So because there is no real knowledge, this is how people live. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's explained, Maya mukta jivira mahi swata krishna kyan. Jivira kripaya koila krishna veda puram. That this illusory energy has covered the conditioned soul. See, at some point, we made a bad choice. It's described how the jiva is tatashta. And this word tatva means shore. So sometimes if you see the beach or the shore, sometimes you see it's covered by water, and sometimes it's not covered by water. So in the same way, the jiva has marginal energy. It can either be under the internal energy or the external energy. It has that choice. But we can understand, if we're conditioned, that at some point along the line, we made a wrong choice. And we chose to come under the external energy. And hence where our lives are clouded with thick ignorance. And so, Jivarakripaya Gola Veda Puran, Krishna Veda Puran. So Krishna has mercifully given the Vedas and the Puranas to destroy this avidya, or this ignorance. And so when we make an endeavor to dispute this transcendental knowledge, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to destroy the ignorance that's there in people's lives. And ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada's vehicle to make this happen. It's Srila Prabhupada's means of sharing this compassion. And as followers of Srila Prabhupada, we have a special opportunity to participate in his, you know, offering to the parampara. And we should understand from this that we're directly connected to Srila Prabhupada when we perform this service, when we assist him in this. Srila Prabhupada was once with one disciple called Pancha Dravida Prabhu. And he was a little concerned because he saw that ISKCON was expanding. And as it was expanding, he was thinking, how is it that I can have a personal connection, personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada? So he went to Prabhupada and explained his concern. And he said that, you know, I'm one side of the planet, you're on another side of the planet, how is it that I have a personal relationship with you? And Srila Prabhupada agreed with him. He said, yeah, ISKCON is very big. And Srila Prabhupada said, yeah, and I'm very small. And because ISKCON is very big and I'm very small, I need help. Actually, he said that to maintain all the temples is my responsibility. But I need you to assist me. And he gave the example, just like when we perform arti. So imagine he said, I'm performing arti, and I ask you to pass me the chamara. So you're assisting me in offering, making an offering to their lordships. So in the same way, when we assist Srila Prabhupada in serving in his various temples, we should understand from this point that Srila Prabhupada is making, that we're directly assisting Srila Prabhupada. That's the mystic behind the transcendental relationship that we have with our spiritual masters and the acharyas. That our relationship is not necessarily based on physical proximity. Srila Prabhupada is quite interesting to note how many times he actually had personal association with his personal spiritual master. Not as many times as other disciples. But Srila Prabhupada often made a statement that never was there a time that I was separate from my spiritual master. So, we assist Srila Prabhupada in this way. But we should also understand that not only does Srila Prabhupada expect us to distribute this knowledge to others, but he also expected us to diligently read his books. You know, it's not that everyone just keeps distributing books and no one ever actually reads them. But the idea is that we have to imbibe the teachings that are presented in these books as well. It's our duty, it's our responsibility. And one of the biggest complaints Prabhupada had about his book distributors is that no one ever actually read his books. He wrote a letter to Rameshwar in 73. And they were talking about the extraordinary scores from the Christmas marathon. And at the end of the whole letter, he said, but the highest realization is to save yourself. He said that the highest realization is to save yourself. He sometimes said that, what if someone on the street asks you, you know, you're distributing books, but have you read those books? What will you say? And if you say, no, I haven't read those books, what will they think of you? In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a conversation between Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami. And in that conversation, Sanatana Goswami is glorifying Haridas Thakur. He says, Apana achare kahe nakare prachar. He explains that some people in this world, they preach nicely, but but they do not behave nicely. They preach nicely, but they do not behave nicely. I'm sure many of us can relate. You know, when we go out and share Krishna consciousness with others, you know, we have a certain persona that we put on. But when we come to the back to the temple, how do we interact with people? How do we interact with the devotees that we're living with? Then he explains that some people, they behave nicely, but they don't preach. So they have all the Vaishnava qualities, but they choose not to extend themselves and share Krishna consciousness with others. So both are good in one sense. But then Sanatana Goswami explains to Haridasa, Achar Pracha Name Karya Guru Karya Tumi Sarva Guru Tumi Achare Jagata Sarvya. He explains that, but you, Haridasa Thakur, you behave nicely and you preach nicely. And because of this, you are the ideal preacher. He explains you have the ability to liberate the entire planet because you have these two qualities. So if we really want to be instruments of compassion, then not only do we have to share this knowledge with others, but we have to also learn to imbibe this knowledge in our own personal lives. Bhaktivedanta Panaswami, he often speaks about how, you know, there's different stages of knowledge. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Okay, it's fine that we receive knowledge, but we have to also learn to imbibe the knowledge that we're learning in our lives. We have to apply it in our lives. We have to actually kind of contemplate the knowledge that's there in the books and think about different ways that we can imbibe it in our lives. Otherwise, what happens is we can start to lead a very kind of like superficial Krishna conscious life. And I'm sure all of us have had that experience where we're performing the ritual of Krishna consciousness, like we've adopted the dress, we've adopted the hairstyle perhaps, we've adopted the language, but there's no substance. See, culture is there to support a higher principle. The lifestyle of Krishna consciousness is there specifically to awaken the dormant Krishna consciousness that's within our lives. Otherwise it kind of defeats the point. You know, it's kind of like before we came to Krishna consciousness we had a certain group of social friends. And now in Krishna consciousness, we have another social friend, a group of social friends. But it's explained in the Padma Purana, Smata Vyam Satatam Vishnu, Vishmata Vyam Najidotit, Sarva Vidhi Nishadyashot, Itadi Olevakin Karaha, that all the rules and regulations of scriptures have two purposes, simply. That to remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. This is why we have the culture of Krishna consciousness present. Because it's supposed to support this principle. So if we neglect this underlying principle, we're making a big mistake. And so at all times we have to learn to be introspective. And Srila Prabhupada's books, they teach us to do this. Krishna consciousness, in one sense, is a journey. You know, we come in as conditioned souls. And we have to make, like in Nectar and Structure, they describe how we're Godas. Like Godas means we're servants of the senses and the mind. And we have to go from being Godas to being Goswamis, which means we're masters of the senses and the mind. But we can only be masters of the senses and the mind by Krishna's grace. So we have to become fully dependent on Krishna. So we have to go from this stage where we have a consciousness which is very materialistic to a consciousness which is based around pleasing Krishna. And this doesn't happen overnight. Imagine you're going from one point, you're on a journey, you're driving from point A to point B. But in that journey there are many stages. If you only know where you begin and where you end, but you don't know what happens in between, then it can be very problematic. So Srila Prabhupada's books, they systematically elevate our consciousness to the perfect stage. And in many of Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada will elaborately describe the various stages of devotional service that we have to go through. And if we ignore to give attention to these things, in one sense we're committing spiritual suicide. Because Prabhupada has painstakingly written these books for our benefit. Prabhupada You know, he would spend sleepless nights writing these books. And if we can't just take some time to really endeavor to understand these books, then in one sense, it's considered somewhat offensive. And specifically, as devotees, you know, when we come to Krishna consciousness, the biggest challenge is to overcome the conditionings that we've acquired because of our past actions. And in the scriptures, this is described as a stage of anatta nivritti. Now, anatta nivritti, Prabhupada says, is a hard struggle with determination. Because not only are you trying to overcome the conditionings that you've acquired before you came to Krishna consciousness, but you're dealing with conditionings that's been there for lifetimes. You know, we all come with our baggage. And that's what stands between us and Krishna. So we have to learn how to overcome this. It's quite interesting to know. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as you know, there are various stages of devotional service. The first is, anyone know what the first stage is? Shraddha, which means we have some adult Shraddha, we have some initial faith. And the second stage? Sadhu Sangha. So after having some initial faith, we decide that we want to make our social circle devotees. And then? Bhajana Kriya, where we make a committed endeavor to perform bhajan. And then? Anatta Nivritti. So Bhajana Kriya and Anatta Nivritti are described to go on hand in hand. As we perform bhajan, we remove anattas from our lives. And then comes?
Nishtha,
which means our faith becomes firm. So it's described that this progression from sadhu sangha to nishtha, it's described as like climbing a mountain. I don't know if anyone here has climbed a mountain. I know some devotees at the manor went to Kilimanjaro. It's not an easy climb to the top of Kilimanjaro. But the climb amount takes a lot of endeavor. After you get to nishtha, from nishtha to ruchi to asakti to bhava to prem, it's described as going down a mountain. So it's a lot easier to progress through those stages. So one can understand that the real challenge is to go from from shraddha to nishtha. And as sadhakas, most of us are kind of caught up in this anatta nivritti stage. Anatta nivritti is actually an extension of the word, or it's extended from the word artha. Artha means, like we hear, that the four Puru Sartas means dharma, artha, karma, moksha. So artha means those things that are wanted. So anatta means those things that are not wanted in our life. You know, anattas are like ghosts, you know, that haunt us, that come in our lives when we don't want them. They're the things that, as I mentioned earlier, that stand between us and Krishna. So we should understand what they are, because pretty much, if we overcome anatta nivritti, success in spiritual life is more than likely guaranteed. Vishaya Chakri Thakur, he describes that there are certain behavioral symptoms of one who is who's going through this stage and who has many anattas. The first, he says, is, anyone know the Sanskrit? That's the third one. There are certain behavioral symptoms, there are certain characteristics of someone that's undergoing an anatta. The first one is utsaha mayi. So utsaha, I'm sure everyone's familiar with it, means one is very enthusiastic. But utsahi mayi means one that is someone who is falsely enthusiastic or falsely confident. And I'm sure everyone, in some degree, has been through this, and especially if you observe new devotees, they come in and they're very enthusiastic about spiritual life. And there's nothing wrong with it. But what happens is sometimes one becomes very enthusiastic, so much so that they become very proud. Like they come in, they're chanting, and they see other devotees that have been around for years, and they think, come on man, why aren't you dancing? Why aren't you chanting enthusiastically? But because this enthusiasm is not based on a proper foundation, this enthusiasm is short-lived. Like in one place, Satchananda Maharaj, he talks about the curve of enthusiasm. It's actually a phenomenon that occurs in many religious movements, that people come in, very, very enthusiastic, gung-ho, but then they kind of dwindle out. You know, we get our challenges, and, you know, nothing's new anymore, and, you know, the devotees, when they first used to come, they used to give me Mahaprasada, but now, you know, they don't, and in fact, they look disgusted when they see me. And so, you know, we kind of tend to leave. So this is the first behavioral symptom, utsahamai. Then the second is ganatarala, which means thick-thin. Which means, basically, sometimes we're very enthusiastic, but sometimes we're very lethargic. Sometimes we're very inspired, sometimes we're not. Our endeavors are very sporadic. You know, you make a vow, from today onwards, I'm going to chant 32 rounds, wake up at 2 a.m., and 3 days later, you wake up 9 o'clock and you chant 4 rounds a day. So if you're going through this, we can understand that this is a natural symptom of being in a stage of anatta-nirriti. The third behavioral symptom is yodha-vikalpa, which means that our determination is very flickering, or we're very, very indecisive. Right? We're not sure what we should do. You know, we're not sure what service we should do. We're not sure whether it's better if I, work outside, have a family, and, you know, contribute to the Krishna conscious movement to do that, or should I go and live in a cave in Vrindavan? You know, I'm just not sure. It's hard to make a decision. So this is yodha-vikalpa. The fourth is visaya-sagara. Visaya-sagara means we struggle with our previous habits. You know, we all have a past, and we all did, let's say, so many nice things. And these things sometimes tend to come back in our lives and haunt us. Right? We think, after a few years in Krishna consciousness, that's it, I've overcome that obstacle that I once had. But then we see how somehow or other it kind of seems to come back in our lives. Or we may go to Krishna and say, this is a habit that I've had for years, but from today onwards, I'm going to renounce it. I promise you, Krishna, I'm not going to indulge in this bad habit. But somehow or other, it comes back in our lives. And this kind of internal tug of war goes on. So this is visaya-sagara. The fifth is niyamakshama. Niyamakshama means the inability to uphold vows. You know, we may make certain vows in Krishna consciousness. Like, every Ekadashi, I've done this many times, every Ekadashi I say I'm going to chant X amount of rounds and I'm not going to eat. But what happens is, there's always some excuse that the mind creates. And you kind of, you don't follow the vow. So this is niyamakshama. And the final thing is, Taranga Dangini. And this is quite an interesting one. It means that we begin to enjoy the opulences of devotional service. So as we practice devotional service, certain benefits may come because of our service. And just by associating with Krishna, the nature of a devotee is that he becomes very attractive. And because he becomes attractive, he may or she may receive recognition, adoration, or may achieve a certain position, or may acquire a certain license with wealth, or may attract a certain type of following. If we begin to enjoy these things, then we've succumbed to this particular anatta. So these are the symptoms that Vishnu-Chakti Thakur gives to show how, or explain, or indicate how someone is going through anatta-nirriti. I know many of those appear in my personal life. So now to our next question is, how do we remove these? How do we remove these anartas in the quickest way possible? There's a famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I wanted to read some statements that Prabhupada makes in the purport to this verse. The verse is, Shimratam Swakata Krishna Punya Shadana Kirtana Vidyantasto Haribhadrani Vidyanoti Savit Satam. The translation is, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So this is, I'm sure, a famous verse that everyone's familiar with. That when one develops the urge to hear Krishna's messages, so Krishna personally, he cleans the heart of all material enjoyment. It's interesting, the Sanskrit for Krishna in this verse is Surit. There's another verse in the Bhagavad Gita where the same word is used. Krishna says, Suridam sarva bhutanam. Krishna says he is our well-wisher. Prabhupada was giving one class and he was explaining that there are different words in Sanskrit for friends. There's bandhu, there's mitya. But surit is the most intimate form, expression of friendship. You know, we have friends, acquaintances. But literally speaking, Krishna is our best friend. And because he's our best friend, he always wants what's good for us. And Prabhupada makes this point in the purport. He says that the Lord is reciprocally respondent to his devotees. When he sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the transcendental service of the Lord and has thus become eager to hear about him, the Lord acts from within the devotee in such a way that the devotee may easily go back to him. Now listen to this. The Lord is more anxious to take us back into his kingdom than we can desire. And then Prabhupada says, most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. Only a very few men want to go back to Godhead. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps them in all respects. So I personally thought that this was very significant. Because, you know, sometimes we think that, you know, where is Krishna in our lives? You know, we're going through hardships, we're going through difficulties, we're going through challenges. But we should understand that the fault doesn't lie in Krishna, but the fault clearly lies in us. And it's a fact, as Prabhupada says, that most of us do not desire to go back to Godhead. This is our unfortunate situation. Most of us, when we first come to Krishna consciousness, we come because we are suffering in the material world. And we're looking to Krishna to relieve that distress. And once that distress is relieved, we kind of think we want to do something else. And so for some devotees, Krishna needs to constantly give them distress, because that's the only way they're going to surrender to him. Like I remember Bhagavan Maharaj, the famous lecture, he was explaining how there's two ways you can come to Krishna. One is you can come voluntarily, or he'll use Maya to lash you, and you'll come crying to Krishna. That's another way. So when Krishna brings distress in our lives, we should understand that this is Krishna's mercy. This is Krishna's grace. Krishna wants what's best for us. And unfortunately, we don't even know how to properly desire. We are not sincere, most of us. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he also explains that, you know, he makes a statement that Prabhupada would often quote, don't be surprised by those who leave Krishna consciousness. Be surprised by those who stay. So from this, one can deduce that, unfortunately, the situation is such that most people will drift from practicing full-on Krishna consciousness. And a rare few souls will stay. So, in this Prabhupada goes on and makes some interesting statements. He says, one cannot enter into the kingdom of Godhead unless one is perfectly cleared of all sins. The material sins are products of our desires to lord it over material nature. It is very difficult to get rid of such desires. Women and wealth are very difficult problems for the devotee making progress on the path back to Godhead. Many stalwarts in the devotional line fell victim to these allurements and thus retreated from the path of liberation. But when one is helped by the Lord himself, the whole process becomes as easy as anything by the divine grace of the Lord. Prabhupada explains, to become restless in the contact of women and wealth is not an astonishment. I suppose for women it would be men. Because every living being is associated with such things from remote time, practically immemorial, and it takes time to recover from this foreign nature. But if one is engaged in hearing the glories of the Lord, gradually he realizes his real position. By the grace of God, such a devotee gets sufficient strength to defend himself from the state of disturbances, and gradually all disturbing elements are eliminated from his mind. So, Shankara is making this point. It's not a surprise if we become agitated by the objects of the senses. It's to be expected. And it's explained how even the greatest personalities fell victim to these allurements. But Prabhupada also gives us hope. He says the key point is that we have to learn to take shelter of Krishna. That's our only hope. So somehow or other we have to arrange our lives in such a way that at every moment we have the opportunity to take shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, as this purport illustrates, that there is no chance. There's no hope. In the next verse, it's explained, Nasta Prayesha Badrishu Nityam Bhavati Sevaya Bhakti Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtiti. That by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by regular service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Now this is also significant. Here, the Sanskrit is Bhagavat Sevaya, but Prabhupada expands this. What does he say? What is? What are the two?
Devotee Bhagavat and Book Bhagavat.
So, the devotee Bhagavat, one who is considered to be living the teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is considered none different to the Book Bhagavatam. And it said, by rendering service to these two, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. As the Sanskrit is abhadreshu, abhadrani, which means basically material inauspiciousness. And this word is actually the same as anarta. It can be taken as the same as anarta. And see the attraction that we have to the material temptations are these anartas. And so Prabhupada, the Bhagavatam itself is giving us the formula to overcome these anartas. That we have to diligently serve the Bhagavatam, whether it's the reading of the Bhagavatam, or whether it's serving those advanced devotees that live the Bhagavatam, or whether it's chanting the holy name. Only these processes can remove the anartas that are there in our hearts and minds. It's quite interesting because it says here in the verse, is almost completely destroyed. Not everything is destroyed. In the final word of this verse says, Naishtiki. And Naishtiki means that it's an irrevocable fact, which means basically one's faith is firm. Which means basically one has achieved the stage of Nishta. And at the stage of Nishta, it's described that 75% of anartas are removed. There's another 25% left. It's not that all anartas are completely removed. But it's quite interesting also to note that which anartas are remaining, because 75% of anartas are removed. And so the anartas that we've acquired because of previous activities and habits, it's described that they're automatically removed by the practice of devotional service. In one sense, they're not considered the biggest deal. But the anartas that are left are created, and this is kind of a warning to all of us, are created from offenses that we commit while performing devotional service. So when we commit offenses as we chant or perform deity worship, anartas are also created. And particularly, see, like, for example, if you, at least Shivram Maharaj in Sutta Bhaktin Chaitanya, he makes this point that if we commit offenses performing deity worship, you know, if you offer prayers and forgiveness, the Lord will forgive you. Or he makes a statement, even if you carelessly chant the Maha Mantra, you can nullify these offenses. But the real problem is when we commit offenses to the holy name. And you know, we often, unfortunately, at least myself, mechanically, we recite the 10 offenses to the holy name every morning. The misconception sometimes is that we think that we only commit offenses to the holy name when we're chanting japa. But when we're performing activities throughout the day, we can be committing offenses to the holy name. In fact, it's described that there's two particular areas of offenses that are important to overcome. The first is Vaishnavaparadha. That's the first offense. Right, to blaspheme the devotees that have dedicated their lives propagating the holy name. And we understand from scripture and past times in the scriptures how Vaishnava Parada, it disgusts Krishna, basically. Of all things, this is something that he cannot tolerate. Even if you go to him personally and ask for forgiveness, Krishna will not. He said it's not up to you. You have to go to the Vaishnava and ask the Vaishnava for forgiveness. And there are many pastimes to illustrate this. Now the problem is when we often we don't know how to deal with Vaishnavas, especially advanced Vaishnavas. But at the same time, if we don't take advantage of that association, we'll fall away. Right, the key to making advancement in spiritual life is to take association with those that are more advanced than us. But at the same time, because often we're a little neophyte in our behavior and interactions, we'll commit offenses. So you have this kind of like catch, kind of 22 situation. That's why it's important that we learn etiquette. Etiquette is the code of conduct that protects us from committing offenses to Vaishnavas. You know, there's a way that we're supposed to deal with senior devotees. There's a way that we're supposed to deal with devotees on the same level. There's a way that we're meant to associate with devotees that are junior to us. And as long as we've not reached the perfected platform, we have to learn what Vaishnava etiquette is and follow it strictly to avoid Vaishnava Parada. I mean, there's so much that can be said about Vaishnava Parada, it's a class in of itself. But the second offense, and I'll finish on this, is inattentiveness when we chant. Bhagavad Gita, he says that the root of all offenses is inattentive chanting. And inattentiveness is described has three manifestations. First is odasimya, which means that we're apathetic when we chant. It means we chant, but we're not really interested in the activity itself. We chant, but there's no enthusiasm, there's no feeling, there's no heart in it. It's just a mechanical performance. So this is the first type of inattentiveness. The second type is called jadya, which means that we chant in a very lazy mood. We chant very lethargically. In fact, so lethargically that the majority of the japa session is spent sleeping. And you know, we've all been through these stages. And unfortunately, sometimes you look around the temple, you see that others are going through these things as well. Or even we're awake, but we're lazy, so lazy that we don't even pronounce the Maha Mantra properly. Or we miss parts of the Maha Mantra. So this is another manifestation of intentness. And the final manifestation is Vikshepa, which means we're chanting, but we're very distracted. Right, we're sitting there trying to chant the holy name. Just to mention that, I personally go through these things. I'm not just saying it for the benefit of everyone in the audience. I'm actually saying it so I can somehow wake up and try and avoid these offenses. But Vikshepa means that we chant, but our mind is distracted. You know, we're thinking about what we're going to do today, or we're thinking about what we're going to do, what we did yesterday. We're thinking about what that person said to me, you know, rudely the other day, or we're observing others and how they're chanting, and we become distracted by that. So these are the things that we have to avoid in regards to inattentiveness. Bhaktisiddhanta Swamiji, one famous purport, he describes what happens if we don't make an endeavor to overcome these offenses. He says that one develops desires, material desires, and anartas, and he gives a whole list. So you can take your pick, you know, which one you want to, which anarta you want to acquire. He explains how one acquires the desire to have yogic siddhis. One develops the desire to have recognition. One becomes or deviates philosophically. One becomes caste conscious. One becomes proud. So the point is, if we don't take our service to the holy name in a very serious manner, it's not that nothing happens, but there is a side effect. And the danger with these anartas is that they can stay with us all the way to the stage of bhava. They're not so easy to remove from our hearts and minds. Their roots are very deep. So although the holy name is all powerful and can remove these things, they said that just by chanting Krishna once, one can remove more sins than he is able to commit. But it depends on the quality of the chanting. It depends on the quality of our relationship with the holy name. And the first symptom we'll see is if we're chanting intensively, if we're committing offenses, is that the practice of devotional service has to have a certain effect. But it won't have that effect if we're offensively performing devotional service or chanting. The blessings that devotional service bestows will not come upon us. If we continue to this way, then eventually what will happen is devotional service will be seen as a mundane activity. Like Prabhupada once, I think it was in Australia, he said that if you do not chant and hear properly, then one day these deities will become a burden. The deity worship that you're performing will become a burden. And the third manifestation of progression, if we continue this offensive mentality, is that we will eventually become inimical to our guru and to Krishna. And this is kind of the culmination of the offensive mood. In fact, the example given in Shastra is of Ramachandra Puri. And because of his great offenses, we see that he was inimical to his guru. Eventually, he became a Mayavadi. And before, he was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And the scriptures give this example as a warning. In fact, it's described that when Ramachandra Puri, he left Jagannath Puri, the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were so relieved. In fact, Krishnadas Kairaj, he explains it was like they had been carrying a stone on their head. And once he had left, they could remove that stone there. So also, we don't want devotees to feel like that about us. But if we continue to imbibe this offensive mentality, then this is our destiny. This is our outcome. And on a final point, someone may say, oh, but I'm not offensive. So this isn't relevant for me. It's explaining the second canto, I think, of Srimad Bhagavatam. It says that when one chants the holy name, tears do not flow from our eyes, our hairs don't stand on end, we don't shiver in ecstasy. These are the astasattvikavikaras, the external symptoms of ecstasy. If we don't experience these things, then one can understand one's heart is still framed. And Prabhupada explains that one can understand that one is offensive. Phalena parichiyate, you judge a tree by its fruit. So if we're not experiencing these things, ecstatic symptoms, when we chant, we can understand that to some degree, some more than others, that there's some offense there. There's some offensive mentality there. So Prabhupada's books, they teach us how to become free from these offenses. And that's why it's our responsibility, as well as sharing this knowledge, that we have to also learn this knowledge and imbibe it in our lives. Prabhupada coined the expression, boil the milk. You know, he wrote one letter, I think, but maybe 75, 76, to the devotees and explained that because of preaching, our movement expanded. But he said that now we should take time to train our devotees. And he gave the example of milk. You know, some people, it's probably from India, to save money, they'll add water to milk. Right? Yeah? They'll add water to milk. But if you keep adding water to milk, eventually it will not be milk anymore, it'll be water. If you keep diluting it. So in the same way, Prabhupada's making this point, okay, it's nice that we're expanding and expanding and expanding, but just like milk, you know, at some point you have to boil it, make it very thick. So in the same way now, we should focus on quality. And so in the same way, we have this also responsibility that we have to share Krishna consciousness, this Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. But at the same time, we have to endeavor to also imbibe the knowledge that we're trying to distribute. Okay, that point I'll stop, we've gone a bit over time. I don't think we'll take questions, there's not much time. Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki
jai.
Shri Prabhupada
ki jai. Shri
Prabhupada
ki jai.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.